días en mi mensaje.
Well, I encourage the audience to follow you on your channel. It's truly worth it. I mean, it's not just worth it, it's definitely worth watching. Do you do it all by yourself or do you have a team?
¿Tú solo o tienes un equipo?
Solo soy yo. Eso fue parte de la cosa.
It's just me. That was part of the experience when I started with TikTok. And honestly, you can just create on your phone, right? With YouTube, I thought this is going to be my chance to learn video editing and all that, which is why some of my early videos are quite experimental and artistic, like the edits and everything.
The one about drugs is super well edited.
Well, yes, it's kind of you. I mean, by the time I got this out, I had already taken this out of my system, like, what do I want to do or not?
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Ocasiones como esta después de haber escuchado a nuestro invitado.
Occasions like this, after listening to our guest, encourage us to reflect on ourselves, challenging the narrative we have been building or that was instilled in us by schools, television, and perhaps even our own parents through the colonization of our minds. In this instance, it's been a great pleasure to have had this guest who clarifies the truth about the issue of drugs and the American interventions in various parts of the world, which are so far removed from the image of democracy, respect for human rights, and adherence to the law that many people hold regarding the different governments of the United States. This isn't about tearing down. It's about building a better world together. I invite you all to join me for the next episode of Gringo.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Greetings, everyone. This is Iran Radio, broadcasting from the bustling capital of Tehran. We are ready to share more programs for the next hour. Let's check out the next lineup. Our next program is Dialogue. This program offers a unique look at the most important conversations and dialogues between Shia infallible imams and their followers, questioners, and leaders of different Islamic faith and sects on various religious topics, doctrines, and also political, social, and cultural issues. Then we have Israel Watch. This program offers a critical look at Zionist media narratives and their views on West Asia. Hosted from Beirut, an expert guest joins for engaging discussions, challenging biased reports, and shedding light on Israel's actions in occupied Palestine. Next up, Ulema's Speak shares scholarly wisdom. Following that, we have Round the World with Reporters. Stay with us for the next program, Dialogue.
We have to have a very fair assessment of this academic and intellectual icon of early Islam.
His impact is more pronounced in jurisprudence that he formalized.
And tens of thousands of statements and teachings have reached us from Al-Imam al-Sadr alayhi salam.
This is Dialogue, an introduction to the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue and I'm your host Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the history of Islam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, was an incredibly prominent character in the history of the Muslims. He benefited humankind with his highly scientific achievements, many of which had never been seen before by humanity. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam's instructions in the acts of worship and transactions and his contribution in the field of legislation were amazing achievements that had not occurred before amongst the Muslim masses. And his eminence also had a positive and active share in the establishment of human culture and civilization. The sixth divinely appointed Imam, the son of Imam Baqir alayhi salam, an individual who was divinely appointed by the Almighty Allah, was known to have improved the general public lives of the people and the Muslims, and he was an individual, a divinely appointed Imam, a man from the household of the Holy Prophet, who enhanced human thoughts and discovered many of the secrets of this universe. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So what an honor it is here to be speaking about the dialogues of the sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq alayhi salam. So we have this interesting conversation between an individual by the name of Muhammad ibn Talha, and he is speaking about and defending Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in front of another individual. So in this conversation, one of the individuals, he says to Muhammad ibn Talha, some words that, you know, were not necessarily appropriate for the sixth divinely appointed Imam and about the sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So in response, Muhammad ibn Talha talks about Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, and he says that Ja'far ibn Muhammad is one of the scholars of the Ahl al-Bayt who are well known for their diverse sciences, abundant worshipping, continuous prayers, worldly renouncement, frequent recitation of the Holy Quran, adherence to the Quran's concepts, deriving the most valuable ideas from the Quran, inferring its importance, and spending their time with various kinds of worship so as to guard themselves against all sorts of impiety. And then, if this wasn't amazing enough of a statement from Muhammad ibn Talha regarding Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in front of, you know, one of the people that he knew, he then continues and he keeps on saying these kind of praises of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, looking at Imam Sadiq alayhi salam reminds us of the day of resurrection. Listening to his speech makes us renounce worldly pleasures, and following him guarantees paradise. He is from the prophetic family. The purity of his actions prove his belongingness to the descendancy of the Messenger of Allah, and many traditions were reported from him, and many prominent scholars benefited from his knowledge. These masters of scholarly considered what they took from His Eminence as honoring grants from Him. So again, you know, these really amazing statements we find from Muhammad ibn Talha, who was talking about the personality of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. What's really interesting is, you know, when you go through and you see all the different things that he says, you find that there are almost every single imaginable dimension of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is being spoken about and is being praised. And it shows you this beautiful, comprehensive personality of our sixth divinely appointed Imam alayhi salam. This is dialogue, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. English. English Radio, our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now let's listen to Sayyid Muhammad Jawad Al-Ghazwini.
The last wasiyya of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam before he passed away. He told them, you expect our shafa'a, the Ahlul Bayt. Let me tell you, la yanalu shafa'atana mustakhiffan bi salatih. The one who takes his salah lightly, is negligent with his salah, he shall not achieve our shafa'a. Our shafa'a will not be given to the person who takes their salah lightly. And we have parents who tell us, Baba, get up and pray. No, I'm busy with my life, with my dunya, with my Xbox, with whatever else. Wallahi, this is the greatest gift you have if you have parents who are encouraging you to pray. Don't you think Allah on the Day of Judgment will bring this lady and other people? And Allah will tell you, you were negligent with your prayer. But this lady did not skip a single prayer, even if she had to pray in the bathroom because she's scared of her family. Another boy said, my father, he threatened me. If he sees me praying, he'd physically beat me. Physically beat me. Yes, I know I can report him to the police, but he's my dad. I don't want to. I want to live with my parents. What do I do? Where do I pray? I'm scared. Every time this time for salah comes, I have to find a creative way to pray. And he doesn't skip a single prayer. Last Ramadan, he had a problem because his parents suspected that he was fasting. Every day there was a dilemma. He had to find creative ways to keep his fast. Subhanallah. These people are hujjas on us on the Day of Judgment. And I conclude with this hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, on the Day of Judgment, there are some people who will slip into paradise secretly. Such that Ridwan, Khazin al-Jannah, Ridwan is the angel who's like the keeper of heaven, right? The gatekeeper. He sees these people, they entered into heaven, and he tells them, how did you get here? I didn't see you come from the main gate. How did you get in? They told him, in dunya, we had to worship Allah secretly. Here in the akhirah, Allah found a secret passage for us into heaven. Subhanallah. Look at the words of the Imam alayhi salam. How much strength these words give to these people. By the way, when I share these hadiths with these people, just see the looks on their faces. It gives them so much tuma'nina, so much patience, so much confidence. Let's appreciate the sciences of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Tired hands toward the sky, and the dark night lights up as you praise God. Your tears rain on your hijab, and this cold air is filled with the fragrance of jasmine. Come on.
For joining us. Hebrew media shed light on the interview conducted by an Israeli newspaper with Tom Barak and the complexities of forming the international force in the Gaza Strip. Other topics included the prospects of escalation against Lebanon. We will discuss these topics with Mr. Khaled Barakat, writer and political researcher, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Mr. Khaled.
Thank you.
Tel Aviv is expressing strong opposition to the participation of Turkish troops in the international force that is to be deployed in Gaza as per U.S. President Donald Trump's plan, which has caused tensions between the entity and the Trump administration. Could this issue cause a major crisis between U.S. and the Israelis?
I don't think it will cause major crisis. It's a tactical difference position between the U.S. Trump administration and the Netanyahu administration, because this is contradictions within the allies. It's not two camps fighting each other. It's the allies and the friends of the United States who are disputing what to divide and how to divide tasks between each other. Turks want, you know, Turkey wants more, Israel wants more. They want to talk about, you know, if, you know, Turkey is going to be involved in Gaza, then how come they don't want us in Syria? And so, basically, this reflects a contradiction within the same camp, competing, not conflict in a major way, but at the same time, the absence, it reveals the absence of the Arabs.
So you're saying that Turkey is in the Western camp?
Absolutely. Turkey is a member of the NATO. Mm-hmm. NATO, you know, and at the same time, when we look at the relationship between Turkey and Israel, not Erdogan and Netanyahu.
Okay.
Turkey, the state, and Israel, the Zionist entity. There is a, we're talking about $5 to $6 billion, trade annually. We're talking about a very strategic agreement in military, intelligence, you name it. And both are friends and allies of the United States. Now, the U.S. administration these days wants to tell the Israelis that you cannot play our role in the region. You have to come to Washington. That's why they tell Netanyahu, come to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Because also, basically the boss is in Washington. And so if you guys disagree with each other, and, you know, we love you all, but you have to come to Washington so we can intervene and
sort this thing out. To take the blessings.
Absolutely. And to because as Barak said, the problem is not these things between Israel and Turkey. The problem is Iran. So even when Iran has nothing to do with actually these kind of contradictions between Turkey and Israel, the United States would rather blame Iran even for these kind of contradictions.
Okay, but how important is this partnership with Turkey to the Trump administration?
I think that...
Because they're insisting and persisting that they should be part of this new phase.
I think the dispute between them is not just on Gaza. The real problem between Turkey and Israel is Syria. And Syria is the absent word here. The Turks wants to basically be the major force in Syria. Israel is occupying Syrian lands, not to mention the Golan Heights. And at the same time, they're not very comfortable with Israel bombing Syria.
Okay, these are the disputes, but how important is it, is this partnership with Turkey to the Trump administration?
Well,
and you spoke
about
interest between the two sides.
It's very important. The relationship between U.S. and Turkey goes way back. And it is extremely important for the United States that Turkey be satisfied. We're talking about a major regional power in the region. Turkey is not a small country or a small power in the region, and the United States have depended on Turkey on so many issues and so many files before the collapse of the Soviet Union and after the collapse of the Soviet Union, to the extent that Turkey gets basically almost what Israel gets with some kind of
modifications.
And every time Turkey wants to...
So it's a true competition here.
Competition.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, U.S. envoy to Syria, Tom Barrack, discussed the issue of Turkey ties with the occupation entity in an interview with the Jerusalem Post.
If you pick up the Turkish papers in the morning, you look at the greater Israel. They say the objective is Israel is going to go from Venice to Dubai. F-35 in Turkish hands is not a problem for Israel? Oh, I think it is a problem for Israel. I think Israel is deathly against it, but that's a ways off. Is there also a normalization path between Erdogan and Netanyahu that you see? I do. I'll be hung up in the Turkish press again tomorrow by saying it. Yes. It makes so much sense. There's only one real problem, which is Iran. The rest are not problems.
Why does Israel appear to be concerned with Turkey playing an enhanced regional role?
Because, again, Israel wants to dominate. Israel feels that it has the surplus power and the U.S. support and the Western support that Turkey doesn't have in the same level. And they feel that this is a chance for them to dominate the region. And so when, greater Israel for the Israelis does not mean to send Israeli, occupation forces to, if they can, they will, but to Jordan and Iraq and Kuwait. And the idea is to dominate the region, to be the power that nothing happened without its consent and its approval. And Turkey feels that this is too much. And particularly...
Fight over influence in the region?
Influence, but at the same time, in the last 2 years, is not like before. After October 7th, the entire region rejects Israel. Israel is not a normal part of this region. And that's why it is important and is in the interest of Turkey and Iran, for example, to work together. It is important for the Arabs and Turkey and Iran to work together because they are natural, a part of our region. The problem is Israel, not Iran. And when Barak said we can solve these issues, but the problem is Iran, well, actually, we can solve these issues, but the problem is Israel.
So you're saying that Israel views Turkey as an obstacle in its Israeli hegemony towards the region, especially the expansionist plan of the greater Israel.
Absolutely. When we look at the history, wars happened between sometimes, same camp. World War I, for example, happened between European forces and capital. they're all capitalists. There is an intensifying moment in the region, and Turkey feels that it can actually have a more influence than Israel, being, you know, seeing that Israel is isolated today in the world.
So they can take advantage of that?
Yes.
Okay, however, do you think that Washington is in the process of settling these dilemmas or some of the disputes between Turkey and Israel for the sake of the second phase of the Gaza Agreement?
At the expense of that. They will,
They will solve the dispute between the two sides?
Yes, at the expense of the people of the region.
Will Turkey apply that? Will Turkey accept it?
I'm not sure if Turkey is going to go all the way with U.S. plans, because, again, Turkey understands that Trump is just a phase. And, you know, the relationship with Trump is excellent with Turkey. It's not like, have you ever seen Trump, you know, criticizing Israel? He always called Erdogan a very close friend, an ally, you know, special friend.
Yeah, but also at the same time, you're saying on the expense of the Arabs, but also Trump has good relationships with the Arabs. He just got trillions of dollars from Saudi Arabia.
Yes, I'm not talking about the Arab monarchist regimes and reactionary regimes.
Okay.
I'm talking about the Arab people. I'm talking about Syria and Lebanon and Palestine. I'm talking about our region here.
Okay.
It will
neighboring
be.
Neighboring countries.
Absolutely. And the people interest, the nation interest, not the government interest. The entire Arab regime today is submitting to U.S. I mean, I don't see any Arab state even willing to criticize the United States. I mean, you know, some Algerian ambassador criticized mildly the United States, he was gone. I mean, we're talking about Algeria, not like, you know, Saudi Arabia. So no one dares now to even talk or criticize the U.S. We are dealing with regimes that they have total submission to U.S. hegemony. They are rushing normalization with Israel. They are cooperating with Israel, especially the Gulf countries, on a daily basis, not just in terms of economy,
but
even
Yeah, but do you think that Barak actually indulged in such sensitive topics and shared it on public, especially on the Jerusalem Post, just to shed the light on one factor, that Iran is the problem? Because that's what they concluded from that interview.
Iran is the elephant in the room that they don't want to, but he is very frank and open, and he say it as is. And sometimes you need to hear it.
What did he mean to say that?
It just to blame someone else, you know, and to use Iran as a, you know, a name.
A pretext?
I say a cry crow, or whatever they call that, you know, to just scare people, scare. And not just, you know, if Iran, for example, if he didn't use Iran, he could have said terrorism is the problem, or Hezbollah is the problem, or Hamas is the problem.
He deliberately mentioned it that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he knows that he's doing this in order to remind the allies that you should be united against Iran. And they're failing to do that. They've been working day and night to build a coalition against Iran.
Yeah, obviously by shedding light on the Turkish role, especially the relationship between Turkey and Trump, is to like diverge the situation from Turkey as an enemy to Iran as an enemy. Do you agree to that scenario?
They never viewed
Israel, of course.
They never viewed Turkey as an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Turkey is an ally.
Yes.
And if Turkey
to
was...
To the Israelis.
Absolutely.
To the Israelis, we're saying.
Again, it's a competition. It's
because
like
the competition is intense between the two sides.
Yes, I mean, in Germany and France, they compete. Britain and, you know, Germany, they compete. And they actually, when you read, you know, like Canada and the U.S., they competed. They had a dispute, you know, over many things. But they're allies. No one would question that Canada is not an ally of the United States.
Okay. In the same interview with the Jerusalem Post, Barak referred to the ongoing contacts between the Netanyahu and Gilani administrations to reach an agreement between the two sides. How likely is it an agreement can actually occur between Gilani and Netanyahu?
What Netanyahu wants from Syria is a total submission. they want the new Syrian regime to come walking on their hands and legs to submit to Israeli conditions. And Israel is not willing to withdraw from one inch of the occupied Syrian territories or from the Golan Heights. And the regime in Syria today is experiencing a new challenges. One is that the people of Syria, regardless of how much you can deceive some, you know, people at certain point of time, they are really looking at this as a submission. And we hear more and more popular voices in Syria saying that we cannot accept Israeli aggression on our land. We cannot accept any kind of relationship with Israel based on Israel keeping, you know, the Israeli, the Syrian occupied land. And even in the ceremonies that they did on 1 year of the so-called victory, people spontaneously in the streets of Damascus were shouting against Israel, against occupation. They were shouting for Gaza and for the resistance. And I think that...
So an agreement is likely, in your opinion?
I don't think so. I don't
but Jolani is not showing any lack of submission, as you're highlighting.
Absolutely, but they want more.
More such as?
They want a total submission. They don't want to give
from the people of Syria.
No, from the regime in Syria. They don't want, okay, if there is...
But they don't show any...
Notice how they call it security
criticism.
Agreement. They're not calling it agreement. They're not calling it even peace agreement. They're calling it security agreement.
Yes.
Security agreements means that Israel will keep all the...
troops.
Syrian land.
Okay.
Including, you know, Jabal al-Sheikh. They're beginning, the Israelis, to call Syrian areas with Hebrew names. Basically, they're saying this is the mountain of Harmon, this is a sacred mountain, about, you know, a Sheikh mountain, Jabal al-Sheikh. They're already advocating for this is the permanent status. And they want to keep the pressure.
Okay, so the total submission, not staying in those lands that they occupied, the Syrian lands. That's the kind of submission that you're talking about.
According to Barak, this needs to have an arrangement. You know, he could say, for example, well, yeah, Israel withdraw from Syrian land like before.
Yes.
You know, the so-called peace for land era. We're not that era anymore, peace for land anymore. Today, what Barak and his, you know, administration wants is to impose new realities.
Okay.
Basically, Israelis will remain in Syria and the Syrian regime have to submit.
Despite that factor. Okay, an interesting statement made by Barak in this interview is that the Turkish, and he said that the Turkish intelligence assisted in intercepting Hezbollah convoys in Syria. First of all, how accurate do you think the statement is? And if it's true, can it be considered as a way to improve ties between Turkey and Israel?
I think that this will condemn Turkey's role in Syria. Is this is Turkish role in Syria? Is to stop you know, any arms coming to the resistance, if we assume that this is correct and it's true. And if it's not true, then why they're not responding to him, saying that...
Do you think it's
true?
Do you think it's actually happened?
Absolutely. These are allies.
Turkish intercepted Hezbollah convoy?
Yes, Farah, because when we talk about this relationship, it's not just media relationship, or they have some kind of committee that they're talking with each other. We're talking about, you know, strategic agreements that between the United States and Turkey. Between the United States and you know, these regional power, and this is serious. This is committees who meet daily. This is defense stuff, intelligence, all kinds of, you know, relationship, and it's 24/7.
Okay, but by shedding light on this aspect, do you think the major reason here is to consider a way to improve the ties between the Israelis and the Turkey,
yes,
even if you agree that they are Turkish, actually stopped this convoy?
Absolutely. He's trying to sell the Israelis that Turkey in Syria is good.
Okay.
Basically, that it's better for Israel if Turkey is in Syria, because that's what they're doing. They're stopping arms to reach Hezbollah.
Okay. Now to the occupied West Bank, where a senior officer in the occupation army warned of individual Palestinian attacks against Israeli forces and settlers, underscoring that this is an imminent danger that must be addressed. Why do you think the potential or the issue of a potential lone wolf Palestinian attack is being raised now?
Because they're trying to justify settlers' actions against Palestinian people. Settlers in the West Bank is basically militias, armed militias by the army and by the Israeli government, protected by the army. And the the ones who are committing crimes against Palestinians is not just the Israeli army, but also these organized gangs and militias. And there are 12 organizations that they have almost 360,000 rifles by Ben-Gavir and by the government.
Supported.
Supported. Mm-hmm. Each Israeli settlement is basically a military camp. Each Israeli colony in the West Bank have a training ground, have weapons, and have even jails.
Yes.
Where sometimes they keep Palestinians for a few days, and then they transfer them to the army.
Okay.
And so they're trying to justify the crimes of the settlers.
Our time is up. Thank you very much. Mr. Khaled Barakat, writer and political researcher, thank you.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. We're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
من اونایی که کارگزاران نظام هستی هستم و مأمور انجام فرمان خدا هستم در امور.
Angels are the administrators of the system of creation, tasked with carrying out God's commands in affairs. In the Quran, a specific mission and role have been assigned to each group of angels. For example, we have al-Naza'at, angels who extract the souls of the wicked with severity, as-Safat, Az-Zariyat, Al-Nasharat, Al-Faragat, and Al-Mudabbirat. This means each angel or group of angels is responsible for a specific task.
Mm-hmm. العابدین علیه السلام یه دعا داره در صحیفه سجدی به فرشته ها.
Imam Zain al-Abidin, the fourth Shia Imam, has a supplication in a Sahifa Sajjadiya where, if I am not mistaken, as I recall, he sends salutations and blessings upon 19 group of angels and says, O God, peace and blessings upon the angels who are responsible for this and that. This shows that Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam also affirmed this, and there is a hierarchy among the angels. The first is from this arrangement, meaning the power of angels differs. Angels also differ, like cranes where each crane lifts a different weight. Each of these angels has a rank, each has a specific known station. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
یوسف جلالی تهران.
روباشاوت گازا.
جروم هیوز برسلز.
سعید پورزا لندن.
راشا سگلم استانبول.
سید امین عالمی کابل.
شاهان آباد ایندین ادمنستریت کشمیر.
For many Syrians, Israel's latest remarks reinforce a belief that the threat extends far beyond Syria's borders. The statement is widely viewed as an open declaration of hostility toward the region, rather than mere political rhetoric.
This entity threatens the entire Arab world, not just Syria or Palestine. We aren't afraid, but there must be a broader popular response, especially by Arabs. Sadly, people's reactions remain slow, while some governments align with Israel.
Syrians also connect these statements to recent Israeli incursions in the south, including the attack on Beit Jinn. Many view these events as early indicators of a dangerous shift that may eventually demand decisive action.
This regime won't stop at Palestine. It wants full control of the region in order to control all the resources of its people. It has been expanding in southern Syria for over a year now. Resistance is our natural and legitimate response by any means available.
Palestinians see that any confrontation with Israel is part of their struggle, as they have always shared destiny with Syrians. They considered this a common struggle.
We must confront this enemy. We know from our experience as Palestinians that it only responds to force and retreats only when pressured. Diplomacy and agreements have no effect because its nature is rooted in violence. As people and governments, we must resist until all occupied lands, from the Golan to Palestine, are reclaimed.
From Damascus to the southern countryside, Syrians say these threats only strengthen their sense of unity and resolve. As tensions rise, many insist they are prepared to face any challenge to their sovereignty and future. Ali Muhammad, Damascus.
Tehran, excitement is running high as the 19th Cinema Verite International Documentary Film Festival has opened its doors. Screenings have begun, drawing filmmakers, critics, and enthusiasts.
This year's festival presents a wide range of films with diverse themes, which is one of its main strengths. 68 films compete in the national section, and nearly 70 take part in the international section. We have also added a new category focusing on Iran, its rich history, and the 12-day war. Many of the strongest works we receive belong to this section.
One of the most remarkable features of this year's festival is the unprecedented presence of some of the most iconic documentary figures. With fresh visual styles and bold storylines, their works represent the new generation shaping the future of nonfiction cinema. The festival's international section this year stands out for its high-profile selections.
I submit to this festival because I read in their website they have this very strong care about human rights and children's rights, also about women filmmakers. So that's why I decided to submit, and then they select my film for the it's in the international competition.
Meanwhile, the Iranian section also reflects the nation's recent history.
This festival is the highest-ranking documentary festival in Iran and enjoys international prestige. That is why I chose to premiere my film here. It is a biographical documentary about a man with a clear vision, someone who left a lasting impact not only on our region, but far beyond.
This year's edition is defined by diversity. Works shaped by social issues, human stories, wartime experiences, and innovative visual approaches.
With celebrated veterans, ambitious newcomers, and international premieres, the 19th Cinema Verite Festival sets the stage for one of the most competitive and closely watched editions yet. Yusuf Shahmadi, Tehran.
At least
least 110 Palestinian abductees have been killed while in Israeli detention. That's according to a new report. It said many of the detainees are regularly subjected to torture, assault, medical neglect, and malnutrition.
After October 7th, Israel's systematic violence and torture against Palestinian prisoners increased rapidly, and this is not only reflected by the increase of fatalities, but also in the witnesses we hear from and the ex-prisoners. Gaza's prisoners are still subjected to more brutal and inhumane treatment, which was noticed more clearly since Ben-Gvir came into office. His policies are reflecting his own extremism.
Ben-Gvir, who oversees Israel's prison system, openly boasts about rising fatalities in Israeli jails. Those close to Ben-Gvir maintain that the hawkish Israeli minister is proud to have aggravated conditions for Palestinian abductees.
I was in prison for nearly 2 years, during which I was subjected to extreme torture and medical neglect. For 4 months, I had scabies, and they refused to give any medicine. Starvation was another method of torture. We would go for days without food, or with the minimum that kept us alive. We witnessed the death of many people inside the prison. One prisoner was Dr. Mossab Hania, who was tortured to death for his last name only.
In addition to the 18,500 documented arrests since October 2023, there are an unknown number taken as part of an Israeli policy of enforced disappearances. 2 years on, thousands of those disappeared from Gaza may no longer be alive. For the 110 Palestinian prisoners who never made it home, the suffering may have ended. However, for the thousands who are still behind the Israeli bars, the agony persists. Ghada Ibrahim, Deir el-Balah City, Palestine.
Again, 120 people were murdered in a massacre by the RSF militia as they attacked a kindergarten, a village, and a hospital. Most of the dead were children aged 3, 4, and 5. The massacre against civilians had been conducted in the village of Kalogi in South Kordofan. Diplomats heard during the presentation of the new report on the humanitarian crisis in Sudan.
And sometimes the situation and the facts are distorted, so we want to shed light on the developments in the country. And also we know that now the UN is saying that Sudan is the largest humanitarian crisis, and so we would like to see why the situation is going in that direction, and what is the magnitude of this humanitarian crisis, and also what is the support that we can get from our partners in the international community.
The new report sheds further light on the UAE's technological and military assistance of the RSF militia. The report says that the shortest way to achieve peace and end the suffering of the Sudanese people is to hold the UAE accountable for its aggression. However, a recent EU Parliament resolution removed the mention of the UAE at the last minute.
The UAE are supporter of the RSF rebels, but after some diplomatic interventions by the UAE, the European Parliament opted to annex its call on the world foreign countries that influence the conflict.
We will keep providing humanitarian aid to ease the suffering of the Sudanese people. Sustainable and safe delivery of humanitarian aid in Sudan remains to be an urgent need to ensure uninterrupted delivery of humanitarian aid.
On Tuesday, an aid convoy of the World Food Programme was attacked in Hamra El Sheikh in North Darfur. It was the sixth such attack this year that has so far led to the killing of 8 World Food Program workers since the beginning of the year.
It's the world's largest humanitarian catastrophe. 30 million people are dependent on humanitarian aid, 15 million of them children. There are 10 million internally displaced people in the country. We're active in Sudan in principle and want to increase our efforts. But there are regions like Al-Fashir that are inaccessible to safe access.
Two unprecedented humanitarian crises, famine and genocide, have been unfolding in Sudan and Gaza. Although witnessed by millions online, the international international community remains unable and unwilling to stop them. Economic and political ties with the perpetrators and states supporting them, most notably the US and the UAE, seem to be more important than human lives in West Asia and Africa. Dieter Reinisch from United Nations in Vienna.
Iran is preparing to host a fresh and potentially decisive round of mediation between Pakistan and Afghanistan's Taliban regime next week, in what is being viewed as the most ambitious diplomatic effort yet to break the deadlock between the two hostile neighbors. The Tehran talks stand out due to the anticipated participation of China and Russia, signaling that leading regional powers now view the escalating Pakistan rift as a direct challenge to wider regional stability. The Tehran initiative follows deadly border clashes between the two uneasy neighbors and earlier rounds of negotiations in Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, none of which produced a breakthrough.
This is a significant development, and what makes the Tehran talks particularly noteworthy is the expected participation of China and Russia. Their involvement signals that major regional players view this standoff between Pakistan and Afghanistan not just as a bilateral issue, but as a potential threat to wider regional stability. Tehran is leveraging both its political weight and the presence of two regional powers to create pressure for dialogue and compromise.
This mediation effort follows recent visits by Iran's senior security and diplomatic officials, reflecting Tehran's urgency to calm rising tensions between Islamabad and Kabul.
Since we have seen the Israeli occupation in Palestine and we have seen the atrocities of Israel, we have seen a very positive, very impactful role of Iran in the region. Iran has started maintaining its foreign relations with the other and neighboring countries. So I believe that Iran this time could be important mediator as compared to the other one, being in as I have already mentioned, that immediate neighbor, being a state, a stakeholder, so having projects with India, being a state. Because we have been blaming Afghanistan that their land is being used by India in creating proxies in Pakistan. So I believe this time we have a mediator that could play a better role than the previous ones.
In the run-up to next week's meeting, Iranian diplomats have intensified shuttle contact with both Pakistan and Afghanistan.
With tensions at their highest in years between Islamabad and Kabul, the Tehran mediation round will test whether coordinated pressure from Iran, supported by China and Russia, can open a path toward restoring trust and containing cross-border threats destabilizing the region. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Across the crowded western areas of Khan Yunis,